Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Derek Volk, president and co-owner of Volk Packaging Corporation, third generation family business, as well as author of Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, you know, today, by the way, I do want to mention one other thing. We have a guest host today. We have David Stearns from Dale Carnegie, Maine. David, welcome to the show as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That's
David
good.
Squared.
That's right. D squared. That's what there we have to actually triple D.
That's right.
Derek.
And Debbie.
And Debbie. We got four Ds today.
Quad D. Yeah.
Quad D. We are seriously in the Ds today. It's all good.
Looks like my report card from high school.
Well, come on. I'm sure there were a few Cs.
A couple.
I'm sure your dad and mom were proud.
C students rule the world.
It's all good. So, you know, before we start, you know, first of all, I want to congratulate you on the book.
Thank you.
Chasing a Rabbit's been doing very well.
Yes.
I'm very proud of it.
It's been amazing, yes.
So talk to us a little bit about the book. Tell the audience a little bit about it in case they aren't aware of it.
It is the story of my experiences as a dad raising a son on the autism spectrum. He has high-functioning autism, formerly known as Asperger's syndrome. And the story basically chronicles from his conception, without the details, right through his 23rd year. And it was quite a roller coaster ride, and actually is still quite interesting. He's working on a sequel, actually, right now.
I bet he is. You know, it's interesting. We were talking a little bit before the show, and to bring the audience into that conversation, how it has made a difference in so many lives, and so many people have come up to you and talked about it. And talk to me about what this has meant to you and your son.
It's been amazing. It's been overwhelming is the word I use most often. I never expected the kind of response that I get. I never expected... First of all, I never thought anybody was going to read it, because I thought when I finished the book, I wrote the whole book without telling my son. And I figured when I told him, he was going to shoot it down and say, there's no way you can tell everybody all those things. And then if he didn't shoot it down, I thought my wife was going to shoot it down, because it's very, very personal. It's brutally honest, as people like to say. And my wife is a state senator. She represents Scarborough, Gorham, and Buxton. And Amy Volk, and I thought she was going to say, yeah, you know, this is just too personal to be sharing with everybody. But they were both amazingly supportive. And since then, we've traveled all around the country. We've done almost 75 presentations now. We just got invited, actually, to a big workforce conference in Houston in December. That's going to have about 1,400 people just focused on workforce issues. And Dylan and I are going to talk about his experiences in the workplace. He's had almost 40 jobs, been fired by, I think, 38 of them. And we're going to talk about that and my experiences as an employer. So the book is just, it's been incredible. We go to these, whether it's at a library in front of 8 people or at a big conference in front of 800, I get the same joy out of sharing our story, because people come up to me and they tell me it changed our family, it changed our life. You know, I had one guy say, you know, you changed my whole way I look and interact with my son. And I just never expected that.
You know, it's interesting. You say that you wrote the book before you really told anyone that you were writing the book. What was the underlying thought process about going through that? Was that personal to you? Did it help you move through the issues, the thought processes? What was the concern behind it?
Well, actually, I sat down to write a business book with a completely selfish intent, which was a friend of mine told me, if I write a business book and I go to a potential client and hand them a book that I wrote, even if it stinks, because they're probably not going to read it anyway, it improves my credibility. And I have more credibility almost instantaneously just by handing them a book. And they'll flip through it, put it on their bookshelf, and never look at it. So it doesn't even have to be good. And so I started to write a business book.
It seemed pretty logical to me.
I thought, you know what, that's probably true. And so I sat down to write a business book, and as I was staring at an empty screen, because I had no idea what I was going to write about, I heard a voice that in my head that I believe was God say, that's not the book you're supposed to be writing. You're supposed to write a book about Dylan.
That's it.
And I literally started just writing. And then I wrote basically the whole book right from off my memory.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, really. And it ended up being about 130,000 words, which is pretty long for a biography, autobiography, whatever you want to call it. But there was a lot to say.
Sure. And a lot that you meant to say.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I had to cut some stuff out to keep it to a reasonable size.
Well, when book two comes out, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
You're going to have some of that extra stuff you can
That'll be interesting. That's going to be from Dylan's perspective. So it'll be very interesting.
So, you know, obviously you've had the book out now for how long?
The book has been out for a little over a year. It came out last May.
Okay. And so the audiences that you've talked to, we predominantly have been in the business world and maybe mothers, dads.
We've been to autism conferences. We've been to workforce development. We've spoken about workforce development issues. We've been to a bunch of libraries. We've been to Jewish Community Center, churches. Basically, whoever invites us will come.
Absolutely. So what is the one story you could tell us about meeting with, it's probably hundreds, but meeting with somebody who came up to you and asked you about the book and told them about changing their lives?
Well, probably one of the most powerful ones was we spoke at the Southern Maine Autism Conference right before the book came out. And after we spoke, one of the things that I speak about and I write about in the book is that I spent a long time just angry at Dylan. Just not for anything he did, just for being him and for not letting us have the family life that I always thought we were going to have and not being the son I always thought I was going to have. I have one son and three daughters. And, you know, you picture your son, you know, captain of the football team and prom king and all those kinds of things. And I had to mourn that. I had to mourn that son that I thought I was going to have so I could really love the one that God gave me. And I talk about that. After I was done, this gentleman came up to me. He was about probably 35 from Millinocket, and he had tears rolling down his cheeks, and he said, I'm so angry at my son, and I didn't even realize it until you put a word to it. Yeah. But that's the word. He said, my younger son is 7, my oldest son is 9, my younger son likes to hunt and fish and play baseball, and all my oldest son wants to do is stay inside on the computer and play Legos. And I just keep telling him all the time, come outside, and he doesn't want to. A year later, my son and daughter spoke at that same conference, which is on our website, chasingtherabbit.org. If you go to the speaking page, you can see Dylan's presentation called Autism and the Sibling Relationship. They were unbelievable. And that same guy was there again. And he came up to me and he said, do you remember me? And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, I just want you to know that you changed my whole relationship with my son. He said, I used to get so angry and frustrated at him when he wouldn't come outside, and now I'll lay on the floor for an hour and a half and play Legos with him, and I don't resent it, and I don't feel like there's any place else I should be. And I didn't even know how to respond. It was just overwhelming. So that's one of my favorite stories.
No, absolutely. Hey, we're talking with Derek Volk. He's the author of Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. You know, David, I know you were talking beforehand with Derek. Go ahead and have a conversation about what we were talking about.
Well, as I said, Derek, I think it was at the Momentum Convention last year. You had the book, Stan.
Main Biz.
I said, I'll buy your book if you promise to autograph it. And so you did very graciously. And so I immediately, I was in, you know, taken by the title, Chasing the Rabbit, and curious, and knowing that my daughter had selective mutism, had been diagnosed with that, and was making some good progress in school. But when I read the book that summer, so many pieces jumped out at me that were similar. Not the whole script, but so many pieces jumped out. I said, what? My gosh, Lily does that. You know, and this fall, she refused to go back to school. She just stopped. She said, I can't go. And so I said, she needs to be reevaluated. There's something else going on here. And sure enough, the latest diagnosis was she is on the spectrum. She's got social phobia as well as the selective mutism. I don't know if I would have prompted that psychiatrist. I said, we need this redone. We need to take another look at this. If I hadn't read your book and been inspired by it.
Well, thank you. That's touching to hear. I'm glad. How is she doing now?
Yeah, she's doing really well. She hasn't got back in school, but we've got some stuff going on this summer. She just went to a one-week computer camp in Falmouth, built her own computer. She's very focused into the technology and, you know, videoing and streaming and, like Dylan. You know, it's just like really they get their arms on something and whew, they tunnel in.
Absolutely.
And that was so helpful to understand that. But she was the one we pictured as the cheerleader and the lacrosse player and that's stay inside and do things without people around.
Yeah. And actually what you talk about is one of the things that we talk about when we speak to human resources people and workforce development people is a lot of times the folks that are trying to help these people get employment have this idea that they're one of two types. They're either happy sitting behind a computer all alone in a cubicle doing programming kind of work, or they're happy at like a Goodwill just doing repetitive motion, you know, piecework all day long. And if they don't fit into one of those categories, which my son doesn't, they don't have a clue on what to do with him. And that's why it's been very frustrating wherever he's been when we try to find people to help him get and keep employment. He's really good at getting jobs. He's excellent at getting jobs. He just can't keep them. And he's the opposite of your daughter. He's extremely outgoing, extremely social. In fact, we just started up a coaching service that he's offering for people on the spectrum who are much more reclusive, much more internal. And because one of the biggest issues is employment, is getting jobs. Mm. They have no idea, a lot of them, how to get through a job interview. And Dylan is unbelievable at job interviews. He literally will get fired and he'll have another job that afternoon. And so he's taught classes. He was in a program in Utah where he actually taught a class on how to get a job, how to get jobs and how to do job interviews. And there was nobody in the room on the spectrum. They weren't there for other reasons. And he still taught a class on how to get jobs. How to keep jobs was not part of the workshop. How to get jobs is his specialty.
So as we're talking about HR professionals and employers, and they're looking at the reality is the job force, the job market today. People are looking for great talent, and they're looking for talent, and it is a challenge. It's really an employee market today, as you know. Employers are struggling to find good talent.
Especially in Southern Maine.
Especially in Southern Maine. And actually, if you can go into many different areas across the country, it's a big problem. We have this stigma, if you want to say, about disabilities. We have this challenge about disabilities that sometimes it's looked at as not necessary. Yes, we want to hire them. We want to get them in, but there's a challenge behind that. And it's the energy, the effort, the challenge that has to be had to make that happen. Where do you see or how do we change that stigma? How do we make the messaging different?
Well, I think it takes people to talk to the HR managers, to talk to small employers, small business employers, to talk to anybody they can talk to help them understand that, number one, we have a huge workforce problem. We have an aging population all over the country, especially in Maine. We're a death spiral state. We're dying at a faster rate than we're being born. So that's one problem. The unemployment rate among people on the autism spectrum is somewhere around 85%. 80 to 85%. And we have this massive wave of, I call it the autism tsunami. There's this huge wave of young people age 16 to 25 entering the workforce. And if we don't figure out how to employ them, then we're all going to end up paying for them because they're all going to be on disability or they're going to be living out in their basements, in their parents' basement, and they're not going to be productive members of society. And that doesn't help anybody. And the fact is these people have skills. whether it's on the autism spectrum. We employ a gentleman who's blind. We employ a woman who's deaf. In most cases, it does not take a lot of accommodations to make it work. You just have to be willing to think outside the box a little and say, what can I do to help this person be successful? And you will not find a more appreciative employee than somebody with a disability. Because if you can find someone with a disability and help them maintain employment and be patient with them, and that's one of the problems that we've had with Dylan, is, and he talks about this in his when he does his presentation, is people don't go by what they, as Dylan puts it, people don't go by what they know. They go by what they feel. So even if you, and this is on our YouTube channel, he talks about this. He said, even if you disclose that you have a disability, if you don't present like you have a disability and they don't feel like you have a disability, they just think you're being difficult, or you're just not cutting it.
Yeah, right.
And it's amazing how little patience they have. And so he'll tell them, I need very clear instructions, you know, and you'd think that would be great. Yeah. And everybody says the same thing. Oh yeah, no problem. We'll be very clear. But people, neurotypical people, people that don't have a disability like Asperger's or autism, they have no idea how often they read between each other's lines. So, like Dylan talks about getting fired from a job where he spills all this mop water and he's asking the boss if it's good enough, and the guy says, if you think that's good enough, I guess we can go. But that's not an answer. That's not a yes or a no. And he just recently lost a job because someone said to him, you know, you should probably do XYZ. And he took that as a suggestion. But what they were actually saying to him was, you better do XYZ or you're going to get in trouble. And had they said, you have to do this or you could get fired, he would have done it. But they said, you know, you should probably do this. And he didn't understand the tone.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I'm good. And so he didn't do it. And then he got fired.
We're talking with Derek Volk, and he's the author of Chasing a Rabbit. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, FM 100.5. And we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today we're talking with Derek Volk, president and co-owner of Volk Packaging and author of Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. We also have a guest host in with us today, David Stearns from Dale Carnegie, Maine. Derek, you know, we're talking about disabilities in the workplace, and we're talking about the challenges that employers sometimes face. Because I want to switch the gears just for a second here on the employer side, if I can, for a second.
Sure.
You're an employer.
Yes.
And you certainly know the challenges that sometimes happen dealing with employees in general, right, in the workplace, and sometimes just to get regular employees to do the right thing half the time, right?
Yes.
Let's start with that.
No comment.
Okay.
No, it is true.
I'll be honest.
We lost three people on our second shift because they thought that smoking pot was fine on break because it was, quote, their time. And it was like a scene from Fast Times at Ridgemont High with Mr. Hand. I'm like, no, it's not your time. It's our time, and you can't come back impaired.
Right.
And they just... Two out of the three of them didn't get it. They were like, but break is our time. And we're like, you got to be kidding me. So it is. It's with the unemployment rate in Cumberland, New York County is somewhere around 4 or 5%, which basically means if you want a job, you can get one.
Yeah.
And as my general manager used to say, some people are unemployed for a reason.
No, it's very true. So, I mean, when we're talking about adding the disability issue to the workforce, supervisors, let's start with that, have to be trained differently and talk differently and act differently That's a lot of extra training and work effort that has to go into that from an employment standpoint, correct?
It is. And again, like you said, it starts with the human resources person or the small business owner. And let's be honest, and I say this when we do our presentation. If you have two people, if the unemployment rate is so low and you have two people come in and they both have similar skills and one of them has a disability like autism where maybe he or she is a little socially awkward or doesn't look you in the eye or doesn't make you feel comfortable, and the other person is someone that you can see going out for a beer with on a Friday night, you know, HR managers, small business owners, they're people. And people want to be around people that they feel comfortable with. And so if you're somebody on the autism spectrum and you have a hard time with those kinds of small talk and conversation and job interviews, and the employer is looking at these two people, he's going to pick the one without the disability. That's just the way it works. That's the reality. And so we need to have a dialogue with human resources managers and small business owners to say, look, there are advantages. First of all, there are tax advantages to hiring people with disabilities. Second of all, you know, there's reasons why you want to hire somebody with a disability. Like I said at the before the break, you will not find a more appreciative employee than if you can find someone with a disability and help them make that job work.
So when an employer is thinking about hiring someone with a disability and they're thinking about, okay, maybe I can get a tax break, maybe I can get somebody who's loyal, what have you seen in regards to the time, effort, extra that it would take? Because an employers are looking at the fact, hey, time is money, right? And look, I'm a big supporter of the idea. I'm trying to just say these are some of the things that employers really do think about.
Yeah, they're legitimate questions.
Right? It's time. So In the efforts that you've seen and the efforts you're out there talking about, what type of time are we talking about? Is it continuous time? Is it?
It's not a lot of time. It's really not a lot of time. You know, we have a woman and a young woman that works in our office on the autism spectrum, and I had to just explain to some people. Most of them had read my book, and a couple of them read my book and say, now I understand her a little better. Yeah. And it just takes understanding. It takes people being willing to be thoughtful and understanding and really to live by the golden rule when it comes to some of these people and say, you know, how much more effort is it going to take to have this person in my workforce? And it really, in most cases, takes very little. And the fact is, when you're talking about people on the autism spectrum, studies have shown that in most workplaces, it's somewhere around a 70-30 split, where 70% of the time in the workforce is actually social and 30% is actually getting work done. And when you have somebody on the autism spectrum who has no interest in being social, you're going to actually get a lot more work out of them at the end of the day.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's really not that much more work. Let's be honest with it. But it is a stigma.
Yeah.
And it's something that has to be mentally shifted by employers.
Yeah. We have a woman in our plant who's deaf, and really the only accommodation that we've had to make is we have to make sure that somebody is kind of there and keeping an eye on her in the event that there's a fire, because we want to make sure she hears the fire alarm, because we own a box plant. So if there's a fire, God forbid, it's going to go quick. And so somebody has to make sure that Sue knows the fire alarm is going off.
Right.
And so we have somebody every day that makes sure that Sue's going to be aware if there's a fire alarm. And that's about it. And she's been with us for like 17 years.
Probably an stellar employee.
She's a great employee. Yeah. She's fantastic.
Dave.
I'm coming back out of the workplace, back into the book. You've got a 23-year diary.
Yes.
Right? Did you keep it? Did you just recall? Because there's some great incidents in there, very focused, timely incidents in there, and so you must have kept a diary or a journal.
Not really.
I mean,
I had some history going back just from things I had on my computer and some things like that, but most of I have a really good long-term memory. I have a terrible, okay. If you gave me your phone number right now, I'd forget it before I even started dialing,
yeah.
But I have a really good long-term memory. And my wife is the opposite, so that works out really well. And so I remember everything. And those stories are just awful hard for us to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the book was written just from memory. And then my wife, when she read the book, she cleaned up a couple of details. Like, I think this date actually happened before this, and I had some things chronologically out of order. You know, but most of it was pretty much done right off the top of my head. And my daughter helped me type. I recorded most of the book, so my daughter helped me type it. And she would send me ideas like, don't forget to talk about this, and don't forget to talk about this story, and tell this story. So she was very helpful.
Well done.
When you had the foresight to write the book and decide to do that, were you thinking about the fact that he's going to be employed pretty soon? I mean, you said he was how old when?
Well, he was already 21. Yeah,
and 21, he had gone through a couple jobs at that
when
point.
When I started
right?
the book, he had already gone through many jobs at that point, and so there's a whole section, a chapter about his jobs, and I list a whole bunch of. You know, maybe 20 of the jobs that he'd had by the time the book was finished and how long he had them and kind of what the result was. And so, yeah, he had jobs for 1 day, 3 days, 1 day, 4 days, 7 days.
Is it really just because of the patience level of the supervisor? Is that really the predominant issue, or were there others?
The predominant issue is just misunderstanding. A lot of jobs he ends up with for a month. There's a pretty consistent pattern, and Dylan talks about this when we do the presentation, and that is the first week they're very patient because it's the training week and they're kind of getting you started, and it's, you know, they got to go through HR and all the tests and the sexual harassment videos and all that. So the first week goes pretty smoothly. The second week they start getting into some things and it starts getting a little more complicated. The third week they start to wonder why you aren't picking up on things quicker, why you're not, you know, following instructions when they give you instructions, because a lot of times, like I said, they're very vague and they're not as clear as they think they're being. And so he doesn't understand the instructions, or he can't follow the instructions. He has a really hard time with time management and also with multitasking. So if somebody expects him to do multiple tasks, it's really difficult for him. And then in the fourth week, they fire. So that's usually how it goes. And by the fourth week, they forget that on the first day he told them he had a disability.
Right. And that's where the challenge really is.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you really think about it, in one way, that's good they've forgotten he had a disability, right? In the sense of they are happy that, you know, he's become a little bit more of the culture. On the same time, that's the whole problem.
Well, the way Dylan describes it is that it's kind of a blessing and a curse to be to have high-functioning autism, because he said, you'd think that I hit the jackpot on the autism spectrum because I can present as normal. But the problem is he's like a really tall 3-year-old that everybody thinks is going to act like a 6-year-old. And then when the 3-year-old has a temper tantrum, everybody looks at him like, what's the matter with that kid? Well, he's 3, but he looks 6, so everybody treats him like he's 6. And that's what happens with Dylan, is because he presents as very normal, people just forget that he has a disability. And he said, what happens is I basically disappoint almost everybody that I ever encounter because they have expectations of me that I can't reach. And so he said, I've known all kinds of people at different schools and programs that I've gone to that are a little lower functioning than I am, is the term they use. And people have lower expectations of them. So they have to do very little to get a pat on the back, great job, you know, awesome. And Dylan says, as he puts it, I have to work my ass off just to be average.
Right.
I have to kill myself just for people to see me as average. And that's really difficult and very frustrating.
We're talking with Derek Volk, author of Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. You know, Derek, as we're talking about employers trying to figure out ways to make this work, you've obviously seen that it hasn't worked consistently for him. Is there a better way from an employer standpoint to have some sort of program, some sort of process for people with either autism or just disabilities in general? Have you seen a better process?
Well, that's a difficult question because there are so many different kinds of jobs and so many different possibilities. But I think one thing that has really stood out for us is Dylan has not been able to get through college because he can't time manage and he can't multitask. And those are two things you absolutely need in college. And, you know, one time he didn't get something done and he had like all day to do it. And my wife texted him back and said, like, no comment. And Dylan knew what that meant. And Dylan's response was, nobody has less time than someone who can't manage it.
Wow.
That's an interesting phrase, but you're right.
And that is so true. And so he has not been able to get through college. And there are a lot of jobs where they want a college degree. So, for example, at a radio station, most radio DJ jobs, program directors, and he knows everything about music. He's like a music encyclopedia. That's his thing. Mm-hmm. So he knows, and he studies the music charts. I mean, he would be an unbelievable program director for a top 40 radio station, mm-hmm. but he won't get even looked at because he doesn't have a college degree. So we need to look at the people's skills instead of whether they got through college with a speech. I'll use myself so I'm not picking on anybody. I was a speech communications major. If my son went through college and got a speech communications degree, he would not be any better a program director at a top 40 radio station because he got a speech communications degree. It would mean nothing in whether that he took art history and biology and math. None of those classes would mean squat for whether he had the skills to really understand what the audience wants to hear at a radio station. But he wouldn't even get the time of day for a job like that.
You know, I think that's a really good point, and one I hadn't really thought of, but the fact that when you really look at a lot of the job postings or other things out there, they require a degree. And so sometimes I guess the question is why?
Yeah, why?
Right? And now certainly I understand if you're a rocket scientist going to go work for NASA.
Sure.
If you're a doctor.
Brain surgeon.
Right? Right. Brain surgeon. I mean, even a dentist. I think there's some basic fundamental, you know, degrees that we want those people to go through, right? Even electrician, we kind of want them to understand how to be a master electrician,
sure.
Or things
yeah.
like that. But certain programs and certain organizations don't necessarily need the degree, but they want it because what, status?
I think it's a way to weed people out in a lot of cases. They can limit the amount of applications they get by saying that they have to have a college degree to apply. I have 9 sales reps. I don't even know off the top of my head how many of them have a college degree. I don't care. They came in, they applied for the job. I saw whether they had the skills to sell boxes, or I thought they had the skills to sell boxes. And all 9 of them are extremely successful and have been with me a long time. If I had gone out and said, somebody has to have a college degree, and Joe Schmo came in and he majored in biology, how on earth would that help him sell boxes? But I think it's a way to kind of funnel the process out for an employer. It's lazy.
Well, look, I mean, I've talked to plenty of employers who will say, hey, look, they must have a degree. I'm not sure I've always asked why, right? Because I'm not sure. That's a great question that I may have to pose to a couple of the ones that we have as to why that is necessary, other than there is something to be said for the process of college, from multitasking to all those things. I do understand that college is more than just a degree sometimes. It's taking you through processes of life.
Sure.
Right? You know,
and I get that,
and
too.
I get that part
discipline
of it.
Discipline.
I certainly understand that from that standpoint. There is an element of it's more than just the degree. It's you've gone through this process and that you know how to, you know, take courses plus maybe do athletics and all the other parts that go to it. But I'm not sure that's always the reason that people give. It's just they must have a degree sometimes.
Well, you know, there's this idea that colleges, that part of going to college, and I get this, is to become, air quotes, well-rounded. Okay, so you take class, like I took art history, okay, so I could become a well-rounded adult when I came out of college. So, you know, I know the difference between a Monet and a Picasso. Whoop-de-doo. How on earth does that help me? But when you're talking about somebody in the autism spectrum, whether it's your daughter or my son, they have specific interests that they hyper-focus on. They call it hyper-focusing. Yeah. And my son's happens to be music. And so, like I always say, if I ever won the Powerball, I would start a college, call it Aspie University, where people could come and I would only allow people to apply that had autism, and they could whatever they were interested in, like your daughter, she could just spend the 4 years just studying that. She didn't have to take art history. She didn't have to take biology. And like Malcolm Gladwell says in Outliers, she'd walk out of there with 10,000 hours and would become an expert at whatever it was that they specialized in.
Well, when you do win the lottery.
Yeah, when
we'll,
I do.
We'll get that right set up.
I got to buy a ticket once in a while. That's probably step one.
We're talking with Derek Volt, president and co-owner of Volt Packaging Corporation, third-generation family business, and author of Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life, Raising a Son on the Spectrum. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Derek Volk, and we're talking about his book, Chasing the Rabbit. Thanks again for being on, Derek.
Yeah, thanks
a
lot for
having
me.
I got to tell you, this has been a great conversation. We have David Stearns here, guest host today, as well guest co-host. Because I'm still here, Dave.
I'm
still here. So you're ready to take over.
So far, yeah.
I know you're ready to take over on this. I know. And just as an upcoming program note, Dave will be doing a couple shows while I'm on vacation for a little bit. So Dave will be doing a couple shows coming up. So
it's
going to be good.
Wow.
It's
going to
be great. So we're training today. In training, as they say.
In training.
Derek, you know, one of the things that we were talking about during the break is a little bit about you were going and talking to parents about, hey, some behaviors that people see in little cards that you hand out. Talk a little bit about that, and then I'll let you and Dave talk a little bit about the what people are seeing.
Yeah, well, the cards, and Dave mentioned that he had one of my cards. I hand those out, and I sell them if people want to buy them. They're on my website. But what they say is, it's a card with the book cover on the front and our website. And on the back, it says, you are witnessing autism. What looks like poor parenting is a child with a neurological disability that's just trying to make it through the day in a world that's often very fast-paced and confusing. Thank you for your patience. Now, the last sentence is a little satirical because usually you hand it to someone who's not being patient. You're handing it to the lady at the supermarket that's giving you the nasty look, or the waitress that is not being patient with your kid and doesn't see that he has a neurological disability, just thinks he's being a brat. And I actually created those cards. Amy and I used to joke about having them back when Dylan was younger. And just as the book was about to come out, I was actually on Facebook, and a friend of mine without kids wrote a post saying, what's the matter with parents today? I'm in a restaurant, and this kid is acting up, and the parents are just letting him and not doing anything about it. There's no more discipline anymore. And I read the feed on below it, and everybody was just railing on these parents. And I thought to myself, and so I couldn't help but jump in, and I said, has it ever occurred to any of you that that child has a neurological disability that you can't see? And those parents thought, hey, let's go out for dinner tonight as a family. And it backfired. And now all they want to do is get the check, go home, get the kid to bed, crawl under the covers, and wish they just stayed home because of all of your judgmental looks. Yeah. That was the end of that feed. I don't think anybody
shut it down. Did it?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I bet
it
did.
And it really angered me because Amy and I were those parents for many, many years. We still are sometimes. And people just don't understand that just because you can't see a disability, and there's a story in my book about a principal, a middle school principal, who they changed his IEP without telling us, and I said, you know, you can't do that. He can't handle what you're asking him to do. And she said, well, he could if he wanted to. And I said, you know, if he were in a wheelchair at the bottom of the stairs, you would never say he could climb up those stairs if he wanted to. Just because you can't see his disability does not make it any less of a disability. And so we're really trying to work on that, getting that message out. That's part of why we, like I said, we started this consulting service, this coaching service for Dylan, where he can coach people, because he is very high. He does have a lot of great communication skills. I mean, goodness, when he was 8 years old, he did a neuropsych, and his communication skills were 12th grade, 9th month. And he was like 8 years old. And so he has great communication skills, verbal communication skills. And he's learned over the years, he's really learned how to navigate. He's lived on his own for several years. And he's learned how to navigate through the world. And we were talking during the break about Dale Carnegie, because a lot of the, and I've done Dale Carnegie class, and a lot of those skills are the exact skills that these people are missing.
Right. I mean, when I read your book, I've been immersed in Carnegie for 35 years, and your book heightened my awareness of what I already knew. Try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view. It's a pretty good human relations principle, right? Be sympathetic with other people's ideas and desires, right?
Yeah.
Be genuinely interested in other people. And
those are the skills that a lot of these people just don't instinctively have, which is why when Dylan was like 12, we made him read How to Win Friends and Influence People.
And working back into the workplace, you know, managers and supervisors need that empathy, need to be able to see things from another person's point of view. The scene you described in the restaurant, those situations happen out on the work floor, and it's people don't in anywhere, I don't think, intentionally plan on making mistakes and come in with, you know, maybe they come in with a bad attitude, but they don't come in to do harm. And so there's usually a system issue and some other things that go on. So I'm fascinated with the idea of maybe some kind of a Carnegie program to, on the one hand, people on the spectrum, but also I think managers can use some training in that fine art.
Some sensitivity training.
Yeah, I mean, a Carnegie class targeted and for people on the autism spectrum, where they could go in and feel comfortable knowing that they're not in a class full of neurologically normal typical people.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with the word normal. Dylan, that's the whole premise of my book title, Chasing the Rabbit, is because Dylan is, I always compared him to a greyhound, and the rabbit, like in a greyhound race, the rabbit is normal, and he can see it, he just can't catch it. And, you know, Dylan says, you know, I'm not normal. I'm not the same as everybody else. And so if you could create a class where these people could go in and learn some of those Dale Carnegie skills that are so important in life that they just don't instinctively have. I mean, I took a Dale Carnegie course 25 years ago, and it was a really good class, but a lot of it was stuff that I just knew anyway. It just common sense, just the way I live. But not everybody has those kinds of skills.
Right.
No, it's very true. And in fact, it's not that they don't know how to do that. It's the fact that they choose not to, or there are factors that make them choose to do things differently.
You're talking about with managers.
Yeah, with managers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they have time deadlines. And they don't, you know, part of this is not that they're trying to be bad people, right? I've said from the beginning, 99% of all managers want to do the right thing. It's just when there are deadlines, when there are stressors, when there are things that are happening in the workplace, people handle stress differently, right? I mean, they handle it in a different way in terms of how they're doing it. Right or wrong, that's what they do in terms of making that happen.
And I've experienced that in my own office. I know that the woman that works in our office, that we can't all give her assignments and expect her to figure out how to get them all done that day. So that was one of the issues that we made a mistake, is people kept bringing her assignments. And, of course, my name is on the building, so she was dropping other people's projects to work on mine. And so we ended up changing it, that everything goes through one person so that they can help coordinate her time. And I always give her a time frame. So I'll say, you know, Sam, I need this, but I don't need it for a week. And that way she knows, you know, you, just because my name's on the building doesn't mean you have to drop everything that other people have asked you to do to do what I need to do and do what I need done. In one case, she did way more than I needed, which was an effort to try to, you know, give me something better than I wanted. But what I explained to her is, you know, I had asked her for a list of names and towns of all these different businesses that I was targeting, and she put in their phone numbers. But I already had their phone numbers, and I didn't need that. So I said, you know, I appreciate that you put that on there, but all the time you typed in those phone numbers was wasted time. So don't, you know, if you want to do something above and beyond, that's awesome. I applaud that. But come and say, would it be helpful if I threw in the phone numbers on the spreadsheet? And I would have said, don't waste your time doing that. I don't need that. Because I had all these cards and I wanted to hand them out by territory, by sales territory. So all I needed to know was how to sort them. They had the phone numbers already on them. It was an unnecessary task. It's little things like that. Now, I didn't yell at her. I didn't get mad at her. I just patiently explained to her.
Well, you coached her to ask a question next time. Don't assume.
Don't be shy.
So that's good coaching.
Right. Yeah. In terms of. We're talking with Derek Volk. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And we're talking with Derek Volk, president and co-owner of Volk Packaging Corporation. You know, I didn't happen to mention this before, but third generational business. That's awesome.
Thank you. 49 years. So next year will be a big one.
You know, that's right. Next year, the big 5-0.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I know. It's like, did you hear that in the background?
God, the voice, like.
The Lord speaking.
And for those listening on the radio, there's a little sound in the background in the studio. We all went, ooh. Mm-hmm. All right. We're talking, of course, about your book, Chasing the Rabbit. So where locally can people come and see you, talk to you about this locally, and come get some autographed copies of your book?
Yeah, well, the best thing to do is go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, and hit the speaking engagement tab. And that has a list of every place we've been and every place we're going. This coming Wednesday, August 9, there's a very special presentation, the first of its kind. It is up at Seniors Plus on 8 Falcon Road in Lewiston. And it is my father and my son that are going to do a presentation, and they're going to talk about autism and the grandparent relationship. They're going to talk about the challenges they've had. It's been unbelievable how many grandparents come to our presentations, and even great grandparents. They just want to understand their grandkids better. And you talked at the beginning of the show about a story, another great story. We were speaking at my parents' place in Florida, and there were about 200 people there, and this guy got up in the middle and left. I didn't see it happen, but he got up and left, and he came back after, and he went over to my father, and he had tears rolling down his cheeks, and he said, I've been so mean to my grandson. He said, I kept saying, you know, all he needs is a good kick in the butt, and all this kid needs is some discipline. I've been so mean to him, and he's just like your grandson. And I didn't realize how he had a real disability. I didn't see it. And my father, you know, said, hey, look, you know, there's still time to mend that relationship. So my father and Dylan will be speaking at Seniors Plus this Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And it should be a really fantastic presentation. And then we're constantly booking libraries. Like I said, we'll go anywhere, libraries. We'll go to private businesses. We've done some main chamber of commerce type events. And then we have some big events that we're going to coming up. We're headed to Houston, Texas for a huge workforce conference in December. We're going to Virginia Tech and Memphis and Savannah, Georgia in February, which I'm pretty pleased about. Mm-hmm. And also in February, we're going to Las Vegas and Utah. So
she's going to all the warm spots.
Yeah. Terrible. I know. It's amazing that I haven't booked North Dakota in February.
Yeah, no. Nothing in Canada during the winter.
That's not going to happen.
Vancouver.
Yeah. I'll go anywhere south.
South in the winter. No, that's
absolutely
great. No, that's great. Well, look, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show today.
Thanks.
This is a great topic. Employers just need to, you know, understand that this is an untapped, dedicated market of individuals who can go out there and really make a difference. It just takes effort, energy, and the willingness to do so.
Yeah,
anything else you'd like to add on that?
No, I just, any chance that we can get to get that message to human resources managers, to small business owners, we will take that opportunity. So hop on our website, chasingtherabbit.org, contact us on how to get us to come speak, and we'd love to come spread this message. And Dylan is fantastic. He is a rock star at these conferences. I texted my wife from Richmond, Virginia last year, and I said, now I know how Ringo Starr felt, because this kid is just an absolute rock star at these conferences.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. When the Q&A starts, I could basically leave the room. They just want to pick his brain and try to understand him better. And like I said, that's why we have Dylan's coaching services, which again you can access right through our website, chasingtherabbit.org. If you have a kid or a young adult that needs some social skills help, Dylan would do a great job helping them out.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So we're happy to promote, and actually after the show, we'll make sure that, of course, this is going to be aired on hrpowerhour.com. We'll have a link directly to your book site. We'll make sure that's all there and people can go to it directly.
That'd be awesome. Thanks,
Dave, thanks
for
again
me.
For our guest hosting.
Dave, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Yeah,
surrounded by Dave.
It's a quadruple D in the show studio today. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Tawny Alvarez. It's back to school time, and you know what that means. That's right. Office supplies seem to be disappearing at an alarming rate. What, if anything, can you do to combat this issue? First, it's always helpful to have an employee who is in charge of supply procurement keep track of what is leaving your storage area. Alternatively, having a checkout log that identifies who has taken what supplies may help keep employees honest. Whichever method you choose, make sure you have in place an office policy that notes that office supplies are company property and should not be taken off the property for personal use. With that policy in place, you will be in a stronger position to discipline employees who are using your office supply cabinet as a personal shopping center for back-to-school needs. For further information on best practices, contact a member of Veral Dana's labor and employment team at veraldana.com.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by veraldana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.